I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I got to change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
Get in zone.
What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
Get in zone.
And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Welcome to Beyond the Scenes, the podcast that goes deeper into topics and segments that we've discussed on The Daily Show. I'm Roy Wood Jr. This is what you got to think of this podcast as, okay? Like The Daily Show, that's your base layer of chips and cheese, right? This podcast is the beans and the lettuce and the guacamole and the salsa, all that extra shit that turn your nachos into real damn nachos. I'm Roy Wood Jr. Today, I'm joined by comedian, best-selling author, host of the Dear Chelsea podcast, and a former guest host of The Daily Show, Chelsea Handler, to discuss all of her time when she was here at the show. Madam Chelsea, welcome to Beyond the Scene.
Oh, hi, Roy. How are you?
I'm good. There is a lot to discuss and praise that I want to heap upon you for things that you have done for the world of stand-up comedy over the decades and the careers of many, many comedians. But first, let's just start with your week at the show. And I give you the same question I asked Leslie Jones. Like, what did you expect this shit was going to be? And how much were you right? And how much were you wrong? Of everybody we've had, like, you're the most experienced. Your pedigree runs the deepest in terms of, we're just counting years and seasons. You had Chelsea on Netflix before that, Chelsea Lately, which ran forever and forever. And that was a Daily Show, the same as this. So how much was the Daily Show machine similar or different to your previous operations?
It's probably more mature than my previous operations. Chelsea Lately was more like a fraternity in the sense that we were all playing jokes on each other all day. It was very immature comedy, but fun, you know, like funny. We loved it, but it was silly and very pop culture centric. So it was like about Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears and all of those girls and the Jersey Shore.
Botox injections.
Yeah, well, that too, yes. But more about being a hot mess in general. Like, you know, just kind of picking apart anyone who acted like a moron. And we didn't really get to talk too much about politics because we were serving it up to an audience that was on the E! Network. And it didn't feel appropriate for the company we were keeping on that network and the programming on that network. Of course, they were like, do whatever you want. But I just always felt like if I want to mature and go beyond it, it wasn't the place for it. So when I did my Netflix show, that was more of a focus there. So I think The Daily Show is a much more refined kind of, more well-rounded and more politically, you know, based program and TV show. So while you can comment on pop culture, the real centrifuge is politics. And I appreciate that because as a 48-year-old woman, I'm much more interested in that than I am in making fun of young girls anymore. You know what I mean?
What I always, and this is just in conversations that I've had with other Black people, what I always appreciated about your Netflix show is that you did it at a time where, in terms of exploring the role that I play as a white person and this, that, and the third, and really learning about new things and taking other people on that journey, you were doing that before it was cool, so to speak. Like, it wasn't like you was headline chasing or some shit. Like, I was watching it, and one of the first comments, I was like, man, Chelsea's like, you know she taking some shit in when she just talking in a normal tone. Because I'm just so used to you as the performer, so used to you, Chelsea Lately, which is more upbeat. But like, hey, what's going on? Tell me about this thing, da da da. Which really felt like some of those pieces felt like something we would have done for The Daily Show. Because I watched some of your stuff on Netflix and I got jealous because I was like, why the fuck didn't we get to go out there and do that? Why is Chelsea Handler getting the scoop on all of the good shit? But in terms of the late night format as a genre, what is it about unscripted content that you've always gravitated towards? Or have you ever wanted to do stuff in other genres? Or is this the wheelhouse that you've always felt most comfortable in for the things that you've wanted to say as a person?
That's a great question. I think those things change as you get, you know, your interests change, obviously. You evolve as a person. So you're interested in, you know, after banging on for 7 years every day about celebrities, clearly you're dehydrated for some more concrete topics to talk about. You know, like I started growing up and I was like, well, this is great, but it's boring now. Like I can do this with my eyes closed. So I needed a challenge. And Netflix, you know, to their credit, let me do whatever the fuck I wanted. I'm like, I'm going to Tokyo. I want to go to Colombia, you know, for personal reasons, but also yes. I could film something. I want to go to, you know, wherever. And I went to Russia. I filmed, you know, a bunch of documentaries with them. And they, you know, I wanted to do, I think the documentary you're referring to, or maybe one of them, I did a couple on race, but one was Hello Privilege, It's Me, Chelsea, which no one wanted to direct. No one wanted anything to do with. It was before Black Lives Matter. It was before all of, you know, the stuff we experienced during COVID, but Netflix said, sure, you know, to their credit, they always were like, you go do whatever you want. If you're the one who's going to take the beating or the criticism. And I'm like, whatever, like, who cares about that? I'm actually being sincere in my questioning and my understanding of the issue to begin with. I wanted to know as a white person, how to impart to myself and to other white people, like what is the problem? What are we talking about? What is white privilege? I assumed it was one thing, you know, like the Rockefellers, like those people had white privilege, not that everybody had it. And so, you know, it wasn't like a fun documentary to shoot. I hooked up with one of my ex-boyfriends that I went out with in high school who's been in prison for 10 years. I mean, that was really difficult for me personally to have to like show up as this famous and successful person while this guy just got out of, you know, jail and has five children and, you know, can barely, you know, support himself. You know, that stuff is always uncomfortable, but I like uncomfortable. I think it's a great way to grow and it's a great way to impart wisdom to the people that are looking for you or to you, right? The people that respect me are my fans. And how do I make them understand what I'm understanding so that we're learning together? So I don't think of myself as a teacher or as any sort of, you know, esteemed person in that sense. I just think of myself as somebody who's willing to take risks and kind of put my feet to the fire. And, you know, whatever backlash there is, I can shoulder it. I'm a big girl. I'm tough. Like, I've been criticized my entire career. So that doesn't bother me. If anything, that fucking motivates me.
Yeah, I think it really came through. And the heart in that really, really came through, in my opinion. Something else that you do that I've always respected, and in the modern era of stand-up comedy, I would say it's less than 10, maybe less than 5 comedians who I believe consistently on a regular basis use their platform to uplift other comedians so that they can build their careers and have a solid foundation from which to build upon. Kevin Hart's done it a great deal. Cat Williams does it a great deal. You did it a huge deal with Chelsea lately. And you know, and all modesty aside, you created a platform for stand-up comedians to come on TV on a regular basis every fucking week and be able to be funny and build their audience and create a relationship with viewers that after the show was even done, they were still able to take the ball and continue running with. What is it about? Because you even then did that here at The Daily Show, is my point. You come here and guest host, and then you do roundtable for 2 days, which hasn't been done before you ever in the history of the show and hasn't been done since. And I don't think it ever will be, because roundtable is such a specific skill set in itself. Why is it so important for you to bring that element, you know, during your time to The Daily Show? What is it about roundtables in general? And then as you were planning The Daily Show, why did you also go, yeah, we need to do that here too?
I think that's great. First of all, it's entertaining for the audience. When you have the right mix of people and you have great comics, which there are plenty, it's a great way to entertain. You know, you've got four different perspectives rolling at you at the same time. And I think the art of that is very specific, because being a comedian, as you well know, is you on a stage with a microphone all by yourself and no one else is allowed to talk. So the idea of performers sharing stage time with other performers is a little bit foreign for the idea of stand-up comedy. And I just thought, when I was doing Chelsea Lately, it was such an easy way to have tons of laughs. It's like you're multiplying the laughter times four people, right? The perspectives. Yeah. I mean, if you're watching that, there's somebody that you're going to relate to more than you're going to relate to one person. If there's four up there, you're going to relate to somebody. There's a higher, you know, probability that you're going to relate to one of those people if you don't relate to me, say. And I think that it is a great way to show by example how easy it is, A, to share that stage and to share that spotlight, and that everybody succeeds with it when you have the right mix of people, which isn't that hard to do. And I like that format. And so I thought, oh, we're doing stuff, like, let's try some stuff out. And since I was there for the whole week, I just thought, well, yeah, let's do it, you know?
You had this quote the first night you were on. You said, and correct me if I'm butchering this, you said, "This is where I get to talk shit about all the whack jobs and hot messes out there," which you did. You know, old Marjorie Taylor Greene caught some heat. Santos caught some heat. Tucker Carlson, caught a lot of heat. When do you think it's still possible in the modern political satire era to shame people into changing? Or are we approaching a shameless era in politics where I think those people try to take those criticisms and use it to make themselves stronger?
Yeah, I don't know where we are in society. I know it's important to speak out, especially as a woman, and especially during this time where everybody's rights are up for sale, and it's just ridiculous. And I honestly feel like anytime there's progress in one direction, clearly there's, like, you know, a pendulum swing. It's like women step up and we have this huge Me Too movement, and then cancel culture has followed that, and then we get our rights taken away, and then abortion is turned over. It's like everything leads to a stronger reaction from the other side. So this is just a product of, you know, the trans rights, the banning of the books, the LGBT community being under assault is a reaction to people saying, we want more. We want more freedom. We want more equality. We want equity. Like, it doesn't. So we're always going to be dealing with it. It's two steps forward and hopefully one step back. And it's just part and parcel of the culture that we live in right now. And no, I don't think you're changing anyone's mind by going off on them. But I think you're reminding, for instance, straight white guys who don't want to get in on it or think they're being attacked. It's like, those are the people we're talking about, the Tucker Carlsons of the world. So the guys that aren't like that should be standing up louder and prouder and fighting for LGBTQI rights, especially when you're not you're not in that population. Fight for women's rights, fight for all of these marginalized groups, because as we've known and as studies show, it hurts men just as much as it hurts the rest of us, this kind of discrimination and this kind of marginalization. So I don't really care what the result is. I think it's just a reminder, like, women are coming into their own. Like, we don't need to have kids and we don't need men to tell us that's what's going to make us happy. If you think I'm going to ever listen to a man telling me what will make me happy, that's wrong. That's not going to happen. And I'm not speaking just for me. There are millions of women who feel this way.
To me, I've always felt like, you know, we're definitely past the Jon Stewart days of, I will shame Tucker Carlson or who's the money guy, Jim Cramer, into coming on my show so we can bat. But I do think that what we do in the modern day political satire field can help change the minds of constituents and voters. I think the talking heads are going to be the talking heads. They are ingrained in there. We're getting our check to say this thing. We're going to say the thing. But you tackled during your week, you tackled everything from voting rights and body positivity and gender disparity in boxing and Broadway. Help for the viewers who don't know how the week is laid out. Help them understand how you decided to choose the topics that you wanted to get into in a broader sense, and then also the day-to-day topics that you decided yes to that, no to that. What were the reasons for including some things and excluding other things?
Well, also, I just want to piggyback on one thing from the previous exchange between us. You know, it's also not about, like, okay, you know, shaming Tucker Carlson as it is to giving a voice to all those other people. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, for the women. Like, when I do that, that gives voice for other people and other women who feel like me and other people that feel ignored, that they haven't been heard. So that's more of my MO than shaming Tucker Carlson, because obviously you're right. He can't be shamed. So to answer that question, I was in communication with Jen a lot before the show, because we were planning on who the guests were going to be. We were going out to different people. It was Super Bowl week. We were hoping to try and get somebody, you know, from one of the teams that was playing. So as you know, since you're at the Daily Show all the time, you know how frenetic that kind of work environment is. There's things that fall out at the last minute, and then there's people that cancel at the last minute. It's always just basically juggling. There's an electricity in that, you know, and that freneticism that makes it really fun. If that's the kind of person you are, who's always like, okay, wait, what? Let's think outside the box. Who would be interesting? Like, for instance, you know, the female boxer that came on was. I had never heard of her before. And then my friend sent me a link and I read it and I watched her and I watched her acceptance speech and Jen saw it and we were like, oh, this would be awesome. You know what I mean? So it's kind of having the latitude to move around quickly and to be dexterous in what you're going to do and what you're going to say. And I think the most important things that we talked about, or the biggest issues we had, were just the biggest stories of the day. I mean, I definitely went into that week like, let's go after Lauren Boebert or Marjorie Taylor Greene or any of these ridiculous Matt Gaetz. I don't even know how to say his name, really. Yeah. And I don't care to find out.
Ask a young girl. She'll tell you. Keep going. Yeah. Sorry about that.
And I like that vibe. I like that kind of workload, you know, when I like it. Listen, there have been plenty of times where I haven't wanted to work for, like, you know, a year straight. And I was in the mood for it. I was like, let's go. This is so much fun, because I do know how to do that. I mean, that's my skill set is to just kind of be dexterous. You have to be quick too. Like, you can't be sticking to a script, as you also know, Roy. Like, you have to be versatile and be able to go off book and to add your own lines in and to know when you've made a point and to know when to keep going.
All right, so you have Raphael Warnock on as a guest. You have the wonderful model Ashley Graham. You have Alicia Baumgartner, the boxer they were just talking about. Leah Michelle as well. Was there a guest you wanted that you just couldn't get? It just didn't work out? Like, was there just a scheduling thing that, like, I really wanted Teyana Taylor for my week, and then I found out she's not going to be in New York the week that I was guest hosting. So I was like, shit. Okay, well, tell her to come back to New York another time. But was there anybody in your pantheon? Let's go all time and Daily Show. Who's a guest? Who's a person you would love to sit down with?
Oh, I mean, I don't look. I mean, yes, I can't remember who the people were that we were trying to get that didn't work out, but I'm sure there were. There always are. That's the nature of this show, of any booking show where you're booking talent. But I think the real important thing to remember is it doesn't matter who the fuck it is. It doesn't. It matters that you're interested and that you're creating a conversation and you're listening, because you can have an interesting conversation with fucking anybody. It doesn't matter how boring they are. You can spice up something if you have that kind of talent. If you're able to just really engage with somebody and listen, you'll find something that's interesting to talk about. So, I mean, is there a dream guest that I have that I'd love to interview? Not really, quite frankly. Like, I'm good with almost... You know, I guess I recently interviewed somebody on my podcast that was surprising to me. Like, I interviewed Matthew McConaughey for his, he's doing this live event. And like, I had never thought about interviewing Matthew McConaughey for anything. And I read his book in a day, the day before I interviewed him, because I hadn't read Green Lights. And I always just kind of had my own impression of Matthew McConaughey, which was neither here nor there. And I read his book and I was blown away. Like, I could have interviewed him for 3 hours. It totally changed my perception and understanding of him and my respect for him. Like, I have major respect for him and everything he put down in that book. So I feel like there are surprises all around, albeit Matthew's a big star. You know, that's a big name and that's a big get. So it's easy to be interested. But you can find interesting things in anybody. And I find, like, regular people just as interesting as I do famous people.
Love it. Well, after the break, we want to talk about one of those quasi-famous people in your public spat. We're talking about old Tucker Carlson. And I want to get into the actual issue that it was that got so many people angry at you, but so many women saying thank you. This is Beyond the Scenes with Chelsea Handler. We'll be right back.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Beyond the Scenes, we are back with Chelsea Handler discussing her time guest hosting on The Daily Show earlier this year. Now, Chelsea, there was a topic that garnered a lot of attention, which was you talking about being childless by choice. It was a longer death segment, but the sketch, if I'm just going to describe it as quickly as possible, you wake up and you just have a great fucking day. You just, it's just a person having a good fucking day. That's all it was. Not a big deal. And it got turned into a TikTok. Conservatives got very, very upset with you about this. I'm not going to go into detail on a lot of the things that they called you, but did you even anticipate this type of response when you decided to put this sketch together? And what's the real reason that's fueling people's anger with you about this?
Lack of humor, hello. I'm in the sketch or whatever it was. I fly to Paris for lunch and I go to Machu Picchu to go for a quick hike in the same day. And then I'm back at home. Like, obviously.
It's like three continents in one sentence.
Yeah.
Now it's time for a workout. So I hit Mount Everest for a quick climb. I invent a time machine, go back in time and kill Hitler.
Freeze, you bastard.
It's amazing what you can do when you have this much free time. And that's a day in the life of a childless woman.
It was just so ridiculous, but obviously it really ruffled some feathers and conservatives' feathers because, you know, conservatives are all about patriarchy and religion is their umbrella or their subterfuge for patriarchy, which is, if anybody knows anything about history, that's where patriarchy began, with religion, to give men, like, you know, power over women. And the idea that men are threatened, first of all, we have a planet that's fucking melting. So having a child at this point in your life, go for it. But for me, like, that's just another reason. Like, I don't want my kid growing up with wearing, you know, a mask for the rest of his life. There are many reasons not to produce. And the idea that that's our responsibility, and by saying we don't want to do that of choice, is not to be believed. Like, it can't be possible that a woman would be happy not being married and not having children. There's just no way that could happen. And there are multiple conservative men who've you know, gone banged on about that. About that, that is a lie. That I'm selling women a lie about, you know, being a girl boss. I think they called it a girl boss, and it's like, but it's not a lie because I'm living it. So, and you're telling me that I'm not living it, but I am.
Behold, a day in the life of a childless woman. The point is to make you feel good about being an aging, deeply unlikable woman who never had kids. Narcissism, it makes you happy.
Feminists like Chelsea Handler, they've been lied to by their society forever. Yeah. That you could be a girl boss and you can do anything a man can do, which everyone who's ever seen a woman back up a vehicle knows that's not true. Your womb resembles a dried up tumbleweed blowing down an old Western town. And your Valentine's Day date for the 10th year in a row is a 10-year-old copy of Magic Mike and a half full bottle of Xanax. And you're trying to pretend like you're happy. Happy, but you're not happy.
You know, when I heard Tucker Carlson's video about me, which I actually didn't hear for a long time because I was in Whistler in my bedroom smoking a joint, reading a book. I was in heaven taking the day off from skiing. I had my TV on. There was a documentary on the TV. I'm in my bed with a joint and a book. Like, these three things are my happiness, okay? And I'm just like, oh, my God. I was sitting there literally that morning going, God, this is exactly what I hoped adulthood would be. You know, just me fucking having the time of my life, educating myself, getting stoned, and I have, the mountains right outside anytime I'm ready to ski. And I kept getting buzzes on my phone and, people were just texting me saying, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Tucker Carlson's talking about you. But I didn't look because who cares? He's always talking about something I've done. And then Jen Flans, your EP, she texted me and said, hey, we think you should respond to the Tucker Carlson. You know, we'll write something up for you. And I said, okay, great. This is what I would want to say too, add this in. And then I just remember thinking, I have to fucking get up and take a shower for this fucking asshole and film something to respond to this moron. And I'm like, all right. So I got in the shower, I blew out my hair, and then I called my friend over. I'm like, you got to come film something. And then at the end of it, filming it, he goes, who's Tucker Carlson? And I go, what? I mean, poor Canadians. Lucky Canadians. They don't have to be exposed to the George Santoses and Tucker Carlsons of the world in the way that America has to suffer. Hey, everyone. I woke up this morning, well, more like this afternoon, and noticed that there was an emergency meeting of the Receding Hairline Society to discuss a comedy video I filmed about not wanting kids. Wow. Why would I even need my own children when I get to hear these crybabies all the time? I mean, I can't believe that bearded version of Tucker Carlson thinks I would take a half a bottle of Xanax. I take way more than that, you silly goose. Look, I don't want to debate whether or not I'm a girl boss, although I did just look at my bank account and think, that's pretty girl boss. And then I thought about the 10 different people, plus 10 plus different people I've been able to put through college. And then I remembered my 6 New York Times best-selling books. Or was it 5? Oh, no, it was 6. And then I remember my recent stand-up special that was just released on Netflix called Revolution. And I thought, yeah, you are a girl boss. You guys seem so triggered by me. I mean, my goodness, Tucker, I think it is time for you to ask yourself a serious question. Are you really upset about how much freedom I have? Or are you upset that you haven't been able to take it away from me yet?
Why was this issue important to bring on the show? And talk to me a little bit about the construction of it, because I feel like you walked in the door with this one kind of already, like, the framing and the scaffolding was already there. How much did you help with assembling the last couple of pieces and putting up the walls, if we want to compare it to construction?
Yeah, it was definitely something I came in wanting to do, talking about it, because I've seen the response. I mean, I do it a lot on my Instagram, making fun of, like, kids, they're not that great. You don't have to do it. Marriage, you don't have to, you could say no. I do PSAs about whatever I think is, silly or stupid or funny. And children, they're not that great, is something that was actually carried over from, I think, my Netflix show. And we started it there. And I realized by the reaction and the volume of people that would repost it and the views it got and the comments it got that I was hitting a chord with women. And I'm not the first person to do this, but I definitely realized, there's like a whole group of people of the population that are just constantly shamed for for not doing something that nobody ever said we had to do in the first place. It's just like this archetype that we're supposed to fulfill, this prophecy that we're supposed to like be built into, like molded into. And it's like, no, don't tell me what to do, because I'll do the opposite. I'm not here to be controlled or make men happy. That's not my purpose. If anything, my purpose is to make women free. You know, like I speak to women, a large part of my audience are women, and I want them to know, like, I got your back. You're not going to fucking deal with this forever, because you've got somebody who's not going to be pushed around or told what to do or treated in that way. Like, I won't stand for it. And, you know, there's a lot of straight guys out there that think that they're on our team, but they're not doing enough to be on our team. You know, like, we need active team members. It's the same thing with any allyship. Like, it's great for you to say you're on our side, but what are you actively doing to promote that equality, and that women shouldn't be told what they're going to do, and not having a child is, you know, that's also a lazy question to ask somebody. You know, when are you going to get married? When are you going to have a baby? Like, it's personal and it's none of your business. I mean, people have just stopped asking me that. And I've been talking about this for my entire career. I've never wanted to have kids, and I just didn't think I was the right type of person to be a parent. I think that's a very valid way to look at something, and more people should look at that. Like, you know, do I have what it takes? Am I selfless enough? Do I have the time? Do I have the bandwidth? Do I have the patience?
Seth Rogen was in an interview a while back, and
I should have married him.
And he talked about his decision to not have children. Zero criticism. There weren't a big cavalcade of people attacking Seth Rogen saying he should be out there raw dogging everybody and making more babies. Why is there a double standard? And that's not an attack on Seth. Shout out to Seth for making the life choices he chose to make. I'm just comparing the response from the public. Why do you think he got the response he got? Lack of response. Well, praise even to some degree. And you were like, how dare you, woman? You know what that uterus is supposed to be for.
Listen, it's not a secret that men are scared of powerful women and women that have a sense of agency. Men are scared. And that's how they decide that they don't like you, that you're too loud, you're too crass. She's too much. I don't like her. But they can't figure out why or what. It's because I'm saying how I feel, and it's because I'm proud about it, and I'm fucking confident about it. And they know that they can't go toe to toe with me, yet they can't pin why they don't like it. I mean, it's just sexism. I mean, that's as simple as it is. Seth's a great guy. I like Seth a lot. I mean, I don't know him that well, but I do like him. But it's a perfect example of the way that women are treated. Like, you're allowed to tell me what to do, but you're not allowed to tell him what to do or be disappointed. I mean, it's just so stupid. But listen, this has been going on since the beginning of time, so it's nothing new to any of us. We're just like, oh my God, it's laughable.
What role, as someone that has been in and around entertainment, you know, I would say for a greater three decades of your career at least, what role do you think society and entertainment plays in reinforcing the traditionalistic views, the patriarchal views? That's not a word, but you know what I'm saying.
Patriarchal.
Patriarchal
views. Oh, well, that's not a word,
okay,
Roy.
Well,
but patriarchal is a word.
I had it the first time. What role does entertainment play in reinforcing that upon women and men? For men to think, yeah, well, you know, you're supposed to be my wife and you're supposed to be at home in the kitchen.
I mean, a big role. It's, of course. I mean, we reflect our society, right? Television, movies reflect what. That's why television's in the middle of a huge transformation. That's why there's more people of color on TV. There's more people. There's more Asians being recognized. It's like, because it's time. It's fucking time. It's not all just about white men controlling everything. And I know that people get sick of women banging on about it, but you have to think about why that bothers you. You know, like, why does it bother you? We want equality, just like everybody deserves to be equal. And I think all marginalized groups coming together and like supporting each other is scary, very scary for patriarchy, because they're going to be outnumbered. And you know, and that's why it's so important also to to have allyship with all these groups and actually to be in tune and understand what the LGBTQ community is fighting for, what trans people are fighting for. You know, I can't tell you even how many liberal friends I have talking about, well, is it right for people to be transitioning at this age? And I heard that 3 girls that were 8 transitioned without even telling their parents. And I'm like, oh my God, do you really think in this country that 8-year-olds got, what are you talking about? Like, everyone's just so misinformed that it's important to really stay up on all of those topics. You know, I mean, it's like everyone's fighting the future in a sense. Like the people in control are fighting and resisting this new group of people that are like, it's not a new group, but it's a louder group than it has been. And we're saying no more, we're done with it. We're all sick of it. And that's changing in television too, and rightfully so. It has to change even more, obviously. It's still not enough. It won't be enough for many years.
How are you able to
sleep at night?
That one. How are you able to sleep at night without a child keeping you awake in the next room? Everyone knows that that's joy. How are you able to address issues this seriously? Because your stand-up to me has never struck me as anger being a key ingredient in the construction of your thoughts performatively. I'm not saying that you aren't angry, but how are you able to take these issues that a lot of people are angry about and not necessarily let that be the sole driving emotion for how you address it? Like, all right, let's go with Tucker Carlson, right? Tucker Carlson claps back at you. You clap back at Tucker. Y'all kind of go back and forth. It's never really angry. Then you deliver what I consider to be the coup de grace. You are topless skiing on your birthday, which is a tradition that I have separate questions about how the hell that came about. But you're topless and skiing. And then Eminem Without Me comes on and you're just cruising down a mountain. Instead of sitting alone in a room with a microphone going, let me tell you what's wrong with Tucker Carlson and see all of these men and all that. Talk to me a little bit about, because for the people that are angry about this, what are the things that you're able to do? How are you able to just ski with no shirt on and choose that over plugging into the raw emotion of the issues?
Well, he doesn't deserve my emotions. I mean, come on. You know, like, you have to be, first of all, telling me the truth before we can talk about exchanging an emotional field. But no, I'm angry. I've always been angry, and I've been angry in my career, and that doesn't really serve me as well as being able to distill it into something with levity. Like, levity attracts more attention, and you bring more people in when you can joke about the preposterousness of a person's claims. And I've just, as I've grown older and gotten into my, you know, more comfortable in my skin, I guess, and I've just been able to modulate the tonality of what is going to have an impact and what is too. You know, if you're screaming all the time, it's very one-noted. That doesn't work for me. I already have a very strong personality. I already come across strong, you know. So I need to bring people in, not push them away. And I've slowly, I've learned how to do that in a much more efficacious way than I used to when I was younger. You know, I didn't care so much about the patriarchy then because I wasn't as clued in as what was happening as I am now. You know, I didn't have struggles becoming successful. It wasn't that difficult for me. I worked really hard, but doors were always opening, you know? So it took me a long time to actually look at it in the face when I didn't experience it myself, but other people were talking about it. And I thought, okay, well, what's my responsibility here? It's like when you talk about women and sexual assault, I haven't been sexually assaulted, but it's my job as a woman to understand what the fuck that means and what that means when somebody goes through that and to talk about it. Just because I don't have personal experience with it doesn't mean that I can ignore it. I'm, you know, when I think that my responsibility is to women. So I think all of that stuff, you just figure out, okay, how can I be more effective in my delivery? It's with the same with my stand-up. I used to talk in this really high pitch and scream and yell. And when I was in my 20s, I couldn't hear myself. Like I would watch myself and cringe. Now it's nice to be able to watch myself and not cringe.
Well, after the break, we'll bring it home with Chelsea Handler. We're going to talk a little bit about diabetic medication that's been used for weight loss. And I want to talk to you a little bit about your podcast, Dear Chelsea. This is Beyond the Scenes. We'll be right back.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Beyond the Scenes, we are bringing it home with Chelsea Handler discussing her guest week on The Daily Show. Now, there was a topic you tackled on the show about these celebrities losing weight with this medicine that's for people with diabetes. Ozempic, I think it's called. I didn't know that this was a thing that was happening all over Hollywood. Like, I know people lose weight on diabetic medication, but I never knew that people were like, oh yeah, let me get it and then create a shortage. How did you first hear about this? Like, I understand that at some point you were on it, but was it because of a legit diabetic reason? Or because
No. I got it from a doctor, an anti-aging doctor in Los Angeles. The other word for it, or the other name for it, is semaglutide. That's the chemical, I guess, the main compound in it. I don't know. I consider myself a pharmacologist, but I don't know the ins and outs of this. So I had semaglutide, and my doctor's like, oh, if you're ever feeling puffy after a trip or something, or you're traveling, you know, take this. You can always just drop 5 pounds. And I was like, oh, okay, great. So I had it in my fridge for like 6 months. And then I came back from Spain. I had been traveling for like a month, and I came back and I was exactly that. I was like, oh, I feel bloated. I'd been drinking the whole vacation. I was like, all right, let me try this. And I went out to lunch. And so I injected myself. I went out to lunch like a week later with a girlfriend, and she was not eating. She's like, I'm nauseated. I'm like, I'm actually nauseated too. I said, but I feel like I'm jet lagged, and that the nausea was stemming from that because I'd been gone for so long. Mm-hmm. So I was here waking up at 3 a.m. in LA every morning. So I just felt like maybe my nausea was derived from, or had come from that. And then she's like, oh, I'm on Ozempic. And I was like, oh, I'm not on Ozempic. And she's like, well, are you on anything? I'm like, well, I'm on something called semaglutide to drop weight. She's like, that's Ozempic. And I was like, oh, wait, what? And I'm like, oh my God, I've been on Ozempic these last 2 weeks. No wonder I felt like shit. So I was on Ozempic, and then I wasn't. And then I just had some at my house that I gave away to my friends and whoever wanted it. It was an Ozempic party, basically. And I'm not on Ozempic. But yes, there's a shortage because everyone in Hollywood is on it. And people don't care that you get nauseated or feel nauseated. They don't give a shit. They want to be thin, and people will do anything to be thin. So there you go. So now there's a shortage because I guess too many celebrities are taking it.
What responsibility does the medical community have to just not prescribing or just giving this stuff away to people who don't legitimately need it.
They don't care. Listen, look at, there's a shortage on Adderall too in this country. They prescribe that to anybody and everybody. I mean, half the women I know in this town are on Adderall also that don't have ADD. So you take it and it makes you just feel like, you know, you did two lines of coke. I mean, people abuse and pharmaceuticals, like that story is, I mean, look at the Sackler family, look at the Purdue pharmacy, look at all that. I don't trust pharma, you know, the pharmaceutical industry one second. You've got to do your own research, unfortunately, and they do have a big responsibility. We have a, you know, the FDA has a big responsibility, but as we've seen so many times, a lot of these agencies are kind of corrupt and there's a lot of profligacy that is going on. So there's, I don't know, it has to be of like a personal value or moral system for somebody running these pharmaceutical agencies to have, and they don't. They want to make money.
So you have a podcast called Dear Chelsea, and you give advice to people, which I think is one of the most noble things, to just create human connections with people, because I always feel like advice is as much for the people consuming it as it is the person you're speaking directly to. Have you ever met any of the people out there on the old, I call it the campaign trail, during your comedy tours, have you ever met any of the people that you've touched with some of your words?
Yes, I have. I have multiple times, and I get tons of DMs, which I try to go through on a regular basis, you know, for people who really are asking advice that don't get picked for Dear Chelsea, or if they've written a letter and they haven't heard back. And then people that have been on the show. And, you know, I started out the show in jest because I just didn't want to do another celebrity interviewing podcast, because obviously I've done that, been there, done that. And I wanted to do something that was actually something that was just a little bit, I like human beings. I like people and I like helping people. I am that personality. I'm a leader. I like to get in there and be like, no, 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 you're in a crisis. I'm a crisis counselor. I can't tell you how many girlfriends in my life have gone through, whether it's a divorce or a death in their family. And I can come in and I know how to do that. And so that's my good superpower. And I wanted to spread that around. And all my audience, it turned into something a lot more meaningful and profound. People call in and are making life-changing decisions about ending relationships that are toxic or leaving their family because their family's Mormon and they're gay and their family, you know, wants to excommunicate them. And you know, stuff like that. It got serious pretty quickly. And I was like, oh, fuck. I mean, it's still fun. You know, we have a good time and we try to have some light stuff too. But we do get in there with some really dark and deep personal issues. And I love that. I got a lot out of going to therapy. I went for 2 years. I wrote a book about it. I did a special about it. I got so much out of it that all I wanted to do was give it to everybody I could meet. I want everyone to have it. Just like I wanted everyone to have Ozempic, Roy. I want everyone to have my, you know, like not even like I know better than you do. Just I want you to have my confidence and my like pick yourself up out of that situation. Like it's going to be okay. We're all going to be okay once you get your shit together. So it's like a kind of a big sister, you know, impact that has.
Okay. So then here's a Dear Chelsea on the spot. What advice do you have for the rest of the guest hosts for The Daily Show?
To be agile, like be there and be in the moment, like, and listen. You know, the best performance comes from listening. And whether that's the voice inside of you, like your good gut, you know, the good voice, not the bad voice, or whether it's listening to someone you're interviewing, you got to be like in there. You can't be in your head. You can't be thinking about anything else. You just have to be in that moment. First of all, it's such a fun moment to be in. So, you know, the nerves are good. That's a good sign. That means you give a shit. So don't worry about your nerves. You know, you don't worry about any of that. Just enjoy it all and embrace it all. I mean, everyone has had a great, there isn't one bad guest week that has happened. And that is a testament to the writers of the show, to Zubin and to Dan's and to Jen Flans. Like that is a machine that can be successful, whomever hosts. So you're walking in there in such good hands that no one has anything to worry about.
Okay, so I want to show you a clip. We're going to end on a clip. We rarely do this. I don't think we've ever done this. We went back into the Daily Show vault. There's actual in this. It's true. there is a building in New Jersey that has hard copies of every episode that has ever been shot of this show. It's not just all living on Paramount Plus. There's an actual fucking building with DVDs, mind you. So somebody made a drive out to Jersey and found this little clip from a 2014 episode of The Daily Show with then host Jon Stewart throwing to a moment of zen. Give us that clip real quick.
Here it is, your moment of zen.
You're a terrible interviewer.
Well, you just weren't keeping my attention.
Listen, it doesn't matter how interesting I am. You signed up for
this
job.
Of course it does.
Well, maybe that's why your job is coming to an end.
That's Chelsea Handler going at Piers Morgan on his then CNN show, which was getting ready to be canceled. What happened up until that point? Like, what was it? Just a shit interview all the way up until that point, or did he say something
official? He was checking his phone while he was asking me questions. He was looking at his phone when I was answering. He was on his phone, and I just was like, "You're a fucking asshole." And you know what? He is a fucking asshole. So he deserves that. I can't wait to run into that piece of shit again.
Well, we cannot wait to see you topless down a mountain saying, "This is for you, Piers," at your next topless skiing celebration.
I have a whole fan group. Tucker, Piers, Ben Shapiro. It goes on and on and on.
Give us a moment of zen for today, then, if you have a moment of zen.
Oh, God, a moment of zen. That's a lot of pressure. Oh, God.
You dropped some gems this whole podcast. Maybe we'll just...
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. I guess find the humor. Find the humor in your day. Because if you can't laugh at some of this shit, it just becomes insurmountable, emotionally insurmountable. And I think the best gift we can all give each other is like, put a smile on your face, give it to other people when you see that they're in need, and really try to listen and take care of each other, because we're in ugly times. And everyone said that for the beginning of the, you know, history of the world. I'm sure it's been like this forever. But I would just say, you know, be sensitive to the people around you and listen. Like, there's so many learning opportunities every single day when you are really present and tuned into people. And so it's not that funny, and it's not that, but it's, I find it to be truer and truer as life goes on. I like to just learn from others.
Chelsea Handler, thank you so, so much for going behind the scenes with me. The podcast is Dear Chelsea, the stand-up specialist revolution. We love you. You're always welcome in this building. And I will talk to you when I'm finally a trained skier. I tried it twice. The shit ain't for me. I will meet you at the at the ski lodge.
Okay, well, that's fine, too. I spend most of my time there anyway.
Perfect. Listen to The Daily Show Beyond the Scenes on Apple Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Saving starts with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider.